Are you looking for a first communion, confirmation, or graduation gift? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for May is the new bonded leather cover edition of Luther's Small and Large Catechisms. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040 and request the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for May, Martin Luther's Small and Large Catechisms, 1-800-325-3040.
I think Alabama has gone too far. They've passed a law that would give a 99-year prison sentence to people who can commit abortion. There's no exception for rape or incest. It's an extreme law, and they want to challenge Roe versus Wade. But my humble view is that this is not the case we want to bring to the Supreme Court, because I think this one will lose.
That's Pat Robertson recently commenting on Alabama's new abortion law that would effectively ban abortions in that state. He's concerned that maybe it's not the law we want Roe v. Wade tested on in the Supreme Court. Well, he's entitled to his opinion. Speaking of opinions, when it comes to Pat Robertson, there are times when his opinions make headlines, like this one. And then there are times when he can go 4 months and even years on television almost every day, if not every day, saying things, commenting on public policy, politics, you name it, and the press doesn't notice. Why do they notice when they do? And when the press refers to him, it's usually as televangelist Pat Robertson. Is that an accurate way of talking about this, what should we call him, a former candidate for U.S. president? That's certainly true. A TV personality? Yes. What else? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to talk about media coverage of Pat Robertson's criticism of Alabama's new abortion law. Terry Mattingly joins us. He's Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
So you say this, I maybe say this three, four times a year. Pat Robertson's back in the news.
And how do you feel? I feel like a psychologist here for a second. How do you feel when you hear those words?
I usually prepare to cringe.
Exactly. We're so used to Pat Robertson being quoted saying thoroughly outrageous things, and things that, frankly, large portions of the conservative to traditional Christian community in America also think are either outrageous or regrettable or whatever. I've always been struck by the fact that the press isn't that interested in knowing the actual background of Pat Robertson and who he is. That term that you used earlier, televangelist, that's one of the ones that makes me cringe as someone who's been covering televangelism scandals since the early to mid 80s. Basically, the word televangelist now has come to mean crazy conservative Christians on TV. Is it safe to say that that's what it means?
Yes.
Because I'm not aware of Pat Robertson having ever done a single evangelistic rally, crusade, or sermon, or whatever in his career. Under anyone's definition of an evangelist as it's traditionally defined, he is not. Now, I'm aware that some people say an evangelist is anyone who shares the good news. And you know what? That may be technically a good translation of the evangel or of that word. But when we start saying that Billy Graham was an evangelist, Billy Graham was an evangelist, you know, in every sense of the word. Pat Robertson, I've always thought the best phrase to use for Pat Robertson is that he's a religious broadcaster. I mean, he fits into that niche of people who sit at a microphone, look straight into the camera, and tell you stuff. I mean, you could put Pat Robertson in the evening format of Fox News, or even better, MSNBC, just to be fun, you could put him there, and wouldn't that basically be the same format? You know, that he's a commentator, someone sits to one side of him, they banter back and forth, they show video, he makes comments about it. It's just that he's consistently doing this from a religious and sometimes scriptural perspective. Within his worldview as a charismatic or Pentecostal Christian. And that's one of the elements the press sometimes fails to take into account when they just refer to him as an evangelical or a conservative Christian or whatever. He's from a very specific school within that world, and that affects him, kind of this power prophecy sort of thing that comes along with him, which allows him to say things like, well, you know, if Nolens doesn't get its act together, God's going to aim another hurricane at him, which is not the sort of thing that you would normally hear at, say, a national meeting of the Southern Baptist Convention, when, technically speaking, Pat Robertson is a Southern Baptist minister, or I think he used to be a Southern Baptist minister. Then he dropped his ordination to run for president. And then after that, in I think it was 2000, there was a non-denominational ordination service that took place to put the Reverend back in front of his name. And he is ordained. He is an ordained minister. In fact, I've always liked to point out to people who just want to watch people's heads explode, that ordination service in 2000, a group of people stood around him and laid hands on him and prayed for him and prayed prayers for him to be ordained. Guess what? One of the people who did that was a charismatic bishop in the Episcopal Church of the United States.
Now, that's unexpected. Well, not unexpected when you consider charismatic, but...
Exactly. So, should we be calling him Father Pat Robertson?
That's true.
I mean, he didn't recite the ordination vows or anything of the Episcopal Church, at least not that I'm aware of. But I always like to point that out, that this Pentecostal charismatic world is thoroughly ecumenical, very racially mixed and diverse. In fact, if you're looking for the most racially diverse churches in America, hands down, it's Pentecostal, charismatic, Assemblies of God, Pentecostalism, etc. In fact, Pentecostalism, as it emerged in America, is the first great movement of Christianity in America that was interracial from day one. So all of that's to say, you can't cover Pat Robertson without taking into account his charismatic Pentecostal beliefs and how that affects the words that are coming out of his mouth. But it's so fun when you're a journalist to embarrass the evangelical world by quoting Pat Robertson as if he today is still one of the major players in the world of evangelical Christianity, as opposed to being an old lion, L-I-O-N, of the religious right of a previous decade. It's a complex situation, but I'm not saying Pat Robertson is meaningless. I'm saying that he's a complex figure, and there's a lot of different views of him, even within the world of evangelicalism. So when he says something like this statement about the Alabama bill, it's going to make news because it seems, I mean, like, you know that when this broke, people in newsrooms went, get out of here. Pat Robertson said, what? And what's intriguing to me is to think, why, in light of the, dare I say, intellectual background of this man, why did he say what he said? That to me is the really interesting story, and I haven't seen a story yet that really asks about that.
Terry Mattingly is our guest on this Thursday, May the 16th. We're talking about media coverage of Pat Robertson's criticism of Alabama's new abortion law. Up next, what do the media need to know about Pat Robertson himself to evaluate whether on this subject he might know what he's talking about?
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Come, Holy Spirit, Lord and Comforter, with words of truth our feeble faith assure. These words open Mark Preuss's new Pentecost hymn for the Lutheran Church, available exclusively in the Lutheran Witness. Grab the May issue of the Missouri Synod's flagship magazine and dig into what the Bible and Lutheran theology have to say about the Holy Spirit, who He is, how He works, and what He wants for your life. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Smartest listeners in radio, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth. Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.
Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Terry Mattingly is our guest, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate. We're talking about media coverage of Pat Robertson's recent criticism of Alabama's new abortion law. Terry, this is an interesting fact, the kind of thing you might even share at a bar late night. What do the media need to know about Pat Robertson himself to evaluate whether on this subject, the subject of this Alabama law and the Supreme Court, he might know what he's talking about?
Yeah, or that he, for sure, that he thinks he knows what he's talking about. And second, he may have good reason to think that. Now, that doesn't mean you have to think that what he's saying is accurate or substantial or whatever. But today, in a piece at Get Religion, I put up a post that noted two pieces of his background that I don't think many journalists know. In fact, I have asked journalists about this. And every once in a while, I'll run into a veteran religion writer who knows these facts about Pat Robertson, and they may or may not think they're relevant. But I think it's important to pause for a second and say, when Pat Robertson says what he is quoted as saying, I critiqued the USA Today story. There were a lot of other stories I could have written about. But he's basically saying, I don't think this is the right time to put this exact case in front of the Supreme Court for legal reasons. That's what he means when he says they went too far. He doesn't mean they went too far in terms of protecting the unborn. He's saying they went too far legally with this bill for reasons that he also thinks. Next point, he also thinks that the political timing in Washington and in the way things are going in Washington and the way things are going across the country with all of these abortion-related bills that are popping up in states all over the place, he in effect is saying, I don't think this makes legal sense right now, the specific bill, and I don't think it makes political sense to have gone as far as they have gone with this bill. Now, the two facts about Pat Robertson that I find intriguing, how many people do you think realize that Pat Robertson is a graduate of Yale Law School?
I didn't know it.
The same school that gave us about half the Supreme Court and that gave us Bill and Hillary Clinton. I've read references, I've tried to document them, that say he graduated near the top of his class at Yale Law School. Now, it is true he heavily specialized in corporate law and business law. And yes, the one time he took the New York State Bar exam, he didn't pass it. And he then went off into doing other things in his life and religious career or whatever. But in his academic background, which includes a seminary degree, he has a Juris Doctor from Yale Law School, which normally, A, is not handed out to people who are intellectually deficient or at least not at that stage of their life. And B, it does imply that you know something about the law. And I guarantee you that you didn't get through Yale Law School without a lot of classes about constitutional law and also a lot of talk about what works and what doesn't work at the Supreme Court, which is essentially what he's saying. He's saying this law is so specific that it's painted the U.S. Supreme Court into a corner. That may be what people were trying to do. Robertson is then saying, for political reasons, especially in light of this very compromise-oriented Chief Justice who is scared to violate the sacred history of the Supreme Court, Robertson doesn't think it's good politics to do it right now. At which point, how many Americans reading stories about Pat Robertson realize that he grew up in Washington, D.C. as the son of a U.S. senator? Did you know that fact?
I did not know that. At least I don't recall having known it.
Yeah. So here we got a guy who grew up in the home of a U.S. senator, and that's very much a part of his background, and I mean, Washington and speaking Washington and Beltway type stuff. His father was a U.S. senator, and he's got a law degree from Yale Law School. Now, once again, you don't have to agree with him. You don't even have to think that what he's saying isn't stupid or whatever. I mean, David French, I think, disagrees with him for reasons of the law. And, of course, David French is from Harvard Law School. But my point here is, if you were writing a story about these statements by Pat Robertson that, A, it's not good law, B, it's not good politics, do you think it's worth a sentence or two to mention that he's a Yale Law School graduate and that he grew up in the home of a U.S. senator, yeah, as well as running for president as kind of a bizarre candidate when he did? I personally think that information is worth a sentence or two if you're trying to understand what he's saying, which brings me to the final point about that. How often do journalists write stories about Pat Robertson and they're really not that interested in knowing what he's saying or why he's saying it or how Christians would even react to what he's saying? It's just, there goes Pat Robertson again. Cue the late night comedians, right?
So had he come out with a statement saying, I applaud the Alabama law and the governor, Kay Ivey, for signing this law, and I hope it goes to the Supreme Court and acts as a vehicle. You mentioned David French. That's his argument. Mm-hmm. Acts as a vehicle for kind of breaking this federal hold on the issue of abortion. Do you think I would have been able to Google it this morning and find it so readily?
What you would have found is a sentence or two in a story about the Alabama law that said the law drew cheers from conservative Christians like da-da-da-da-da-da-da and televangelist Pat Robertson, or including televangelist Pat Robertson. Or if he had said something wild, according to televangelist Pat Robertson, who said so-and-so, the journalists were kind of caught off guard in this case, and it turned into a story because, for the reason that you said right up front, it's like, wait, Pat Robertson opposed, you know, just like we've had some stories about Catholic bishops under some circumstances opposing specific bills about abortion for reasons that they don't think the state's ready for it. They think it's going to get slammed down, and they're worried that that's going to then hurt pro-life efforts in their state. In other words, we're in an era where most of the pro-life movement has been actively committed to something that most people call incrementalism, that you're probably not going to get the court to shoot right at Roe versus Wade and overturn that full decision. But what you might get under the Roe language about trimesters and stuff, and you and I have talked about that, what you might get is an initial stage in which things like a heartbeat law might just conceivably get upheld as kind of a neutral standard for it. For sure, the concept of viability, which is mentioned in Roe, and with viability continuing to move back and back and back, you might get the viability standard established. You might get a Supreme Court decision that says, oh, and by the way, we think states have every right to require the same kind of medical safety standards and credentialing standards and hospital access standards for abortion that you have in any other procedure in which there are life-threatening potential circumstances for the mother, for the woman involved in this procedure. In other words, they've said, let's give the court a chance to give us a central position, and maybe we can have laws that resemble more like the laws in Europe. I mean, I don't think most Americans realize that the current regime of abortion laws in America is culturally and legally way left of what you see in most of Europe. I once asked E.J. Dion, a leading political writer and commentator and kind of progressive Catholic in Washington. Years ago, I asked him, when one of his books on politics and religion came out, I asked him, why does America have abortion laws that are more liberal than Sweden? And he thought about it for a long time, and he said, well, the Democratic Party and the American press's fear of Christian conservatives and others. I mean, it doesn't have to do with the law at that point. It has to do with not conceding anything. So, well, I think what Pat Robertson might be saying, and I'd love to see the whole rest of the other that interview, what he might be saying is, at this point, let's give the court something that allows incrementalism, because I think that's more what Justice Roberts is going to want to do anyway. And Justice Kavanaugh has an incrementalist history as well. There might be several people on the court who are ready to overturn Roe at this point. Maybe. I don't think I've met anyone who thinks there are 5 or 6 votes on the U.S. Supreme Court to do that yet. And I think that's what Pat Robertson is saying. And you don't get that sense out of the kind of, oh my God, he said what, headlines that we've had about this story.
We're talking with Terry Mattingly of the On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate about media coverage of Pat Robertson's criticism of Alabama's new abortion law. We'll take up that term televangelist again after this.
Are you tired of working out at big box gyms? You'll find quality personal training and qualified instruction at Performance Fitness in Edwardsville. You can even work out for a full 30 days before making a commitment to join. Find out more at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. Performancefitness618.com.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
LCMS Rural and Small Town Mission exists to support and encourage congregations in rural and small town settings. In partnership with LCMS districts, RSTM is uniquely positioned to make a major impact in revitalization support, community engagement and outreach training, congregational partnership development, and worker support through providing and developing resources geared specifically to rural and small town congregations. Check us out at lcms.org/RSTM or give us a call at our office. We're here to help.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Terry Mattingly is our guest, founder and editor of Get Religion. We're talking about media coverage of Pat Robertson's criticism of Alabama's new abortion law. You can meet and hear Ross Douthit of the New York Times, Carol Tobias of National Right to Life, LCMS President Pastor Matt Harrison, Pastor Hans Feeney of Lutheran Satire, Wesley Smith of National Review, LCMS Worship Director Will Whedon, Pastor Jonathan Fisk, author of Broken and Echo, and Dr. Tom Korchak of Concordia University Chicago at the 2019 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, the premier conference for Christian laity. It's Friday, June 7th and Saturday, June 8th at Concordia University Chicago. Now, attendance is limited. Child care is free thanks to Lutheran Church Extension Fund. You can find out more and register at issuesetc.org, making the case June 7th and 8th in Chicago. Terry, let's come back to that subject, the term televangelist. And it strikes me that if you Google the word, you get the typical cast of characters there. But you wouldn't call, say, Billy Graham a televangelist. You call him an evangelist, but not a televangelist. What is the connotation of this word in the parlance of the media, and how does that word, in the media's use of it, take on that force?
Well, mainly this, you have to flash back to the great televangelism scandals of the early 1980s, when Jim Baker, who of course began working with Pat Robertson early on, Jim Baker was the other name that people would have said televangelist, Jimmy Swaggart, and his spectacular fall at that point. And then, of course, another televangelist, Jerry Falwell, came in to take over for Jim Baker. Now, Jim Baker was a religious broadcaster and talk show host. Jimmy Swaggart is someone who did, in his heyday, do huge rallies and probably did things that resembled evangelistic rallies, but he was also the head of a super church, mega church, as well as a religious broadcaster. Jerry Falwell is another one of those guys that I don't think ever did anything that would be called crusade evangelist, although that as a Baptist pastor standing in his own pulpit, he gave many, many an altar call. But I never understood why Jerry Falwell was called a televangelist either. He did a lot of radio broadcasting as well. But this is a term that grew out of scandal to describe a group of overwhelmingly men, white men, who were ridiculous from the viewpoint of the press. Now, what I think is interesting is anyone who's ever driven down a highway in the middle of nowhere listening to AM radio knows that there are just as many African-American evangelists and radio speakers and preachers as whites, or there's a lot of Hispanics out there as well. But I live in the Bible Belt and in the South. So when I roll through my, you know, looking for a ball game or National Public Radio or whatever, when I'm on the road trying down the radio station, I hit just as many African-American radio preachers as I do white. But televangelist definitely means white, Republican, conservative, and operating with elevators that don't stop at all the floors. A few tacos short of a combination platter. Not dealing with a full deck. Pick a metaphor, whichever one you want.
So I'm curious here about the kind of the transient nature of journalism's attention to someone like Pat Robertson. Can you explain to me in journalistic terms why, for or against the Alabama law, he would warrant a mention, but they largely don't pay attention to anything else he has to say unless it has to do with American politics?
Of course, because politics is all that's real. Everything else he talks about is religion, and religion isn't all that real. But if he talks about things that are hot button and political issues, that's real. And that's news. Now, Robertson, I think, can say crazy things about movies and a bunch of other stuff, and it will make the news because it's Pat Robertson saying crazy stuff again. Long ago, I wrote a piece for the ethics team at the Poynter Institute, the journalism think tank in St. Petersburg, Florida. I wrote a piece called Excommunicating Pat Robertson. And that was in 2005. That was a long time ago. And I basically argued, isn't it about time to quote other people? I mean, why are we assuming that this man stands for a huge block of the American religious population, and we're not paying attention to rising Latino leaders in the Assemblies of God? We're not looking at, you know, an African-American being elected as president of the Southern Baptist Convention, or now we've got a kind of a, gosh, blue jeans and Hawaiian shirt rock band-backed Gen X guy serving as president of the Southern Baptist Convention. There's all these interesting people to look at, but Robertson is still viewed as a symbolic big chief on the religious right. And there's that fun detail that he ran for president. So until he's gone, we're stuck with him, and the press will quote him occasionally for the right reasons, but from my perspective, far more often, they will quote him as a living stereotype that fits their template of what those bad people believe. And he's good for a laugh, and he's good for a headline.
With a minute here, when he's gone, who becomes the next televangelist blank? Who becomes the next go-to? Let's see what the lunatic fringe of evangelicalism has to say about this.
I don't know. I could nominate some people. I guarantee you it will be someone who backed Donald Trump. It will be someone who has said wild things about what God's doing in American politics. It will be someone who fills that need that we can quote this one person, and we think we have just described the views of 40% of the American population. And it's not that I think Pat Robertson is unimportant, but there is no way that Pat Robertson's voice speaks for 40% of the American public. And I'm using that figure as the high end of where Gallup would put the people in America who identify themselves as born-again Christians, let alone religious conservatives of various types, including charismatic Roman Catholics, Eastern Orthodox, Orthodox Jews, et cetera, et cetera. Pat Robertson isn't as powerful as the press needs him to be. And I think that's bad journalism.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He is author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thanks.
Glad to be here.
In hour two of Issues Etc., Suzanne Venker joins us. We'll talk women, men, and sex. The question we'll deal with is, why has feminism been telling women that they not only need to think about sex the way men do, but actually practice sex the way men do? And what has it done to women? Then it's This Week in Pop Christianity. We'll talk about a Trump-Cyrus coin being offered by Jim Baker and Lance Wallnau. Pastor Chris Rosebro will be our guest.
Education and edification. You're listening to Issues Etc.